We are continuing our sermon series, working through the book of Proverbs. And I say working through, but it's really a survey. It's very difficult to preach through Proverbs in the way that we preach through other books of the Bible, just because it changes from verse to verse. So it would be very, very slow if we just went through one verse at a time. But Deuteronomy, chapter 11, verses 13 to 21. The Ten Commandments have just been given to Israel. There's additional law that is given. And we have this instruction from God. It's commonly referred to as the Shema. And basically, the basic message of it is that families are to look for opportunities to talk about God. Families are to look for opportunities to talk about God. Because you know what it's like, right? You know what it was like coming to church this morning. You know all the things you had to do before you got out the door. And while you were doing all those things to get ready to come and spend time with God, you didn't think about God. You thought about, where are those shoes I'm looking for? You thought about, which tie do I wear with this shirt? You thought about, does this shirt need ironing? No, it'll be fine. You thought about, you know, all sorts of things. Who's going to be there? What are the kids going to do? You know, do I have everything packed in my bag? Who's driving today? Then you thought about, perhaps you come the same route every week, but, you know, so you're on autopilot. You're looking around at the weather. And so as you drive, you're not really thinking about God. If you have children, there's all sorts of things going on in the back of the car. And you are not having a God conversation with them. They're not excited and looking forward to this divine knowledge that they're going to receive when they arrive at church. There's no sense of anticipation for the wonderful lessons that the teachers are going to have. They're just looking forward to seeing their friends, unless they already know their friends are not going to be there, in which they're not looking forward to being there at all, right? And so all of this is happening before we arrive, and we get here and we read this text, and it says, look for opportunities to talk about God as you go through life. Like, even as we come to this place to spend time with God, it's hard to find opportunities to talk about God in the family. The book of Proverbs really is one way of following this instruction from Deuteronomy. It opens with the father speaking to the son. In chapter 1, verse 8, it's repeated in chapter 10, verse 1. Both parents, really, speaking to children. It closes specifically with the mother's advice to her son in 31. And the first 9 verses, King Lemuel's mother, her advice to her son. And so we have these bookends on the book of Proverbs that says, parent teaching child. Parent teaching child. One at the start and one at the end. And it's this idea of faith transmission that I want to look at today. As I mentioned, the actual proverbs between chapters 10 and chapters 29 are pretty random. Hey, here's one about money. Ernest read us one about money. But the one before or after might be about, son, don't go chasing after women. The one before or after that might be about working hard or not working hard. The one before or after that might be about pursue God, you know, fear God, value wisdom. Who knows, based on any given proverb, what the next or the previous proverb, what the topic was. But that's not to say that, you know, it's not like a whole bunch of fortune cookies, you know, messages just fell on the floor and got all mixed up and picked up and, you know, called Proverbs and put together in that way. There is a little more organization to it than that. There are threads that run through it. There are threads regarding money, and we'll talk about finances next week from the book of Proverbs. There are also threads regarding wisdom. There are threads regarding relationships, threads regarding righteousness and warnings against foolishness, warnings against friends and the people that we spend time with. And so there are these threads that run through. Occasionally there's clusters of them that are grouped together. But there's also a movement of thought. In the first chapters 10 through 15, and you see this really clearly in chapters 10 and 11, there's a lot of these statements that contrast righteousness on the one hand and wickedness on the other. And in these proverbs, the righteous behavior is blessed and the wickedness is punished. For example, Proverbs 10, verse 27. The fear of the Lord adds length to life, but the years of the wicked are cut short. Wealth is worthless. So that's over this side. Wealth is worthless in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivers from death. The righteous person is rescued. 11, verse 8. That was 11, 4, 11, verse 8. The righteous person is rescued from trouble, and it falls on the wicked instead. And so, still there. And so we have this contrast between righteousness and wickedness. But it's very simplistic thinking, isn't it? To say that if you're good, good will happen to you. If you're bad, bad will happen to you. If you're good, your bad will happen to the bad people even. All right. I don't know what your life has been like, but mine hasn't quite followed that plan. Yeah. If my bad has happened to the bad people, then we need to redefine good, is kind of what I'm thinking. Sometimes. Overall, my life has been one that I wouldn't trade in. But we can all think, whether it's ourselves or someone else, we can think of a godly person who died young, despite what Proverbs says about a righteous person, the Lord adds length to life. So does that mean that the book of Proverbs is full of lies? Not really, which is good. You know, I mean, I'm here to tell you the book of Proverbs is not full of lies. Like, you don't get nuggets of good information like that just anywhere. Okay? So stick with me here. In chapters 10 to 11, it's the starting point of these proverbs. And when we start with simple stuff, don't we? Isn't that just how life goes? This is like wisdom 101. There's a basic principle, and I think that all of us recognize the justice of this basic principle. That good things should happen to good people. And bad things should happen to bad people. In fact, we could say that the way that God originally designed the world was to be exactly like that. That there was only good, and only good things would happen to those good people. And then even in our view of how history and time plays out, we expect that at some point, everything will be made right. And by that, we mean that people who have a relationship with God will have a good ending, and people who have no relationship with God or are rebellious and defiant to God will have a bad ending. And so this principle, even though we look at it in Proverbs and we go, well, that's not the way life is still the way we view life. And we recognize that those exceptions where it doesn't play out, are disappointing, are less than ideal, are not the way that this world should be. And so it's very basic, but it's a starting point in our development of wisdom. In fact, if we were to go back to Deuteronomy 11, and there in verse 26, this same passage, it says, God says, "See, I am setting before you a blessing and a curse. The blessing if you obey the commands of the Lord your God that I am giving you today. The curse if you disobey the commands of the Lord your God and turn from the way I command you today by following other gods which you have not known." So God says to Israel as a nation, if you're loyal to me, I'll bless you. And if you chase after other gods, I'll curse you. There'll be consequences for that. And so although it's simplistic thinking, it's still a basic truth, a basic expectation for the way the world should be. And God operates at that level many times. But that's not the whole story of Proverbs. Okay? Because if that was the whole story of Proverbs, I don't think we'd spend a lot of time there. And so, as we move through, we find other proverbs that have a more nuanced sense of how this world works. And from chapter 16, chapters 10 to 15 are largely that mindset. And then chapter 15, 16 through the next few chapters, it's much more common to acknowledge the gray in life, the mystery, the uncertainty of life. For instance, in chapter 16, verse 9, and this verse is repeated, or this proverb is repeated almost verbatim in chapter 19, chapter 20, chapter 21. It says this: "In their hearts, humans plan their course, but the Lord establishes their steps." Now, if life just worked out that you do good, you get good, you do bad, you get bad, then it wouldn't be hard to plan our lives, would it? Yeah. Go to school, get good grades, study hard, you get good grades, you go to college, get good grades, you get a job. Good job, get a good job. Well, then you'll find a marriage partner, you have children. I mean, like, life just follows whatever plan you want. I mean, you may want to go to high school, major in skateboarding, join an adventure company, make your own videos, fly off mountains. I mean, like, whatever it is, you would put in that effort and energy and you would arrive at the goal and the destination that you were pursuing. And yet, Proverbs here in chapter 16 and in these other places says, no, life isn't like that. We set our goals. Life throws us curveballs, but the Lord establishes our steps. So wherever our steps take us, when we're faithful to God, it is God that is there with us, holding us firm in those places. And so we get this sense now in this second part of Proverbs that we don't control our own destiny. And I think that's an important place. For those of us who are Christians, we've come to this place in our life, haven't we? Where we said, I've done the best I can, but I don't control my own destiny. There are things in life that I can't get through. There are things in life that I can't handle on my own. There are things in life that I need God's involvement if I'm going to come out of this. Chapter 20 contains a couple more examples. Verse 5 says this: "The purposes of a person's heart are deep waters, but the one who has insight draws them out. Many claim to have unfailing love, but a faithful person who can find?" You see, it's not just life that's complicated. People are complicated, right? Have you noticed that too? Like people are kind of, not you, but but the person sitting next to you, oh, I mean, sorry, if you're married, in front of you. That person is complicated. The purposes of that person's heart are deep waters. We don't explain ourselves. We don't expose ourselves. We don't just lay ourselves out there for everyone to see. And so sometimes when we expect things to happen, where we expect relationships to work a particular way, when we expect organizations or churches to function in a particular way, they don't. And we don't understand why. And it takes a wise person, a person of insight, to draw them out of their deep waters, of their deep places. And then it says, many claim to have unfailing love, but a faithful person who can find. Proverbs says, words are cheap. Words are cheap. I think we experience that in churches, don't we? Haven't we been places where the preachers got up and said, hey, we're a great family, we're there for each other, and then we've needed someone? And we've had to work our way down a list before we found that faithful person to help us at that situation, at that time that we need. And so life is complex, is part of the message of this section of Proverbs. But as we think about then, how do we pass on our faith? And what we see in Proverbs is this reminder that everyone is at a different place in their faith journey. Okay? So when we think of Proverbs and think of a father to a child, we often think biologically. And that's fine. That's certainly one reference. But I think in churches, we're also talking about younger Christians, okay? So if you're like, hey, I don't have kids, or my kids are grown, or whatever, like, this also applies to people that are young in the faith. So you can just sort of make that substitution as we go through here. But we tell children, or new converts, new disciples, that the simple things about our faith, don't we? You know, like this is who Jesus is. This is what Jesus has done. This is why, and we might tell our children, don't tell a lie because God doesn't like lies. Okay? We tend to paint for our children a very black and white world about this is good, this is bad. Like the first chapters of Proverbs, you know, 10 through 15, because we say this is righteousness, this is the good stuff, this is the behavior that God likes, and this is the wickedness. Don't do that. If your friends at school are bullying somebody, walk away. You know, if they're destroying property or whatever it is that they're doing that you know is wrong, then you leave there because that's wickedness and you shouldn't be with them. You know, we might add to it. But we don't really get into, with those children, why do you think they did that? What's their greater need in life that they felt an urge to destroy property? Okay? But when those kids go to the principal's office, the principal may be asking those kind of questions, right? What's going on in your life? Why have you started now, or have you been doing this? Like, what do you get out of destroying property? Are there problems at home? You know, do you not have a way of expressing yourself? Do you not have anyone you can... And it becomes this much bigger thing. But we're not going to tell our children, our young children, that all those ideas, are we? And so we begin with the simple things and we paint a black and white world, and then as they grow, we expand it and we look at all these different factors that may come into that person's life. And whereas it's like, don't do it, and you disobeyed and that was clear cut, now as we get further down the road, we might say, well, why did you do that? Is there a need that needs to be addressed? Can we resolve this? Can we make you more positive going forward and change that behavior because we address a need that is more important than the behavior that was played out there. And so life becomes more complex as we go. And it's likewise with our faith. Right. I mean, we could throw out words like justification, couldn't we? And we say, do you expect a new Christian to understand that word? No, we expect them to understand the story of Jesus, the cross and the resurrection, the sinfulness of humanity, the broken relationship. But we don't expect them to have this vocabulary that comes through years of studying the Bible. We don't expect them to understand all of the ethics or all of the applications and how they relate to God's relationship with humanity, or how he worked through Israel to bring people to himself. Things like that. And so, life changes. And we learn and we grow more as we go through it, just like Proverbs does. Here's the simple thinking of the way the world should be, and here's how we live in a world that isn't the way that we believe it should be. So I want to make two suggestions this morning, because Proverbs is a very practical book. And the first one is one that I haven't done, but just as I'm brainstorming and trying to think of how we can process this, it's simply this. What if we, if your family or you as an individual, have wisdom goals? Okay. Have wisdom goals. If you've ever had a peek inside a sports team locker room, nasty places. On the walls of the locker room, there'll often be slogans, and they may change year for year. Some of them will stay the same. Beat the Patriots. perhaps some I've heard, fight for every blade of grass. Never back down. Protect your teammates. And so what the team has done, what the coach has done, and every time a coach changes, you know, they bring in their own slogans and they paint them up on the wall. And what they're doing is they're saying, these are the values of our sports team. And we're going to break it down into just a few words for you. It might just be fight. You know, like go out there and fight. And so perhaps as they go out of the tunnel, out onto the field, that's what the last word they see. Or strong, or whatever it is. And so they break it down and say, this is who we are. This is our character. And by putting those words up, they're communicating, we don't want to be soft. We don't want to be a pushover. We don't want the opponent to walk over us. We want to stand up for our teammates. And so what does your family have when it comes to wisdom? What are your family values? And how do you communicate them? Okay. So, I think we want to say, oh, well, it's the Bible, and we take our kids to church. Okay. And that's a starting point. Yeah. But what if we had a family book of wisdom? Okay. And we had them written down to record modern proverbs that reinforce godly virtues. I think that for those who are on social media, in many ways the memes that we see circulated function as proverbs in today's society. Okay. Now, some of them are consistent with Christian values and some are not, and so you need to sort through those. But if you're looking for proverbs, then they're all out there, all over social media. The thing is, you know, with social media, it's like, oh, that is great piece of advice or wisdom. And it's like, scroll, 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 scroll. You know? It's like, oh, kittens, you know. And so that great piece of wisdom is lost. And so what if you made an effort of collecting it and categorizing it? So if you're in your book, family book of wisdom, you have a page for each fruit of the Spirit. You have a page for different Christian godly virtues, and then you see a meme or you see a get a fortune. It could be in a fortune cookie, who knows? But it could just be something someone in the house says one day and you go, that's for the wisdom book. And it becomes a family thing where you're finding ways of reinforcing the messages that we want our family to uphold. Okay? And it may not be a wisdom book. Maybe you've got your own way of doing that. But I think when we look at the book of Proverbs, that's what it's doing. It's saying, here is the advice that a father is giving a child, that parents are giving children to say, if you want to honor God, here's what you need to remember. And then, like I said last week, ultimately, it's up to the children to use those proverbs at the right time, to use the right proverb at the right time. But as parents, as church teachers, leaders, it's our job to communicate, to make sure they have those proverbs, they have that teaching, they have those resources. The downside of the WWJD bracelets, what would Jesus do? Is that it's so subjective. Like, I always wanted to have my own bracelet that said Rybapho. read your Bible and find out. but it's like, that's the point, is that if we don't have those answers, if we don't have that base of knowledge, then we just answer the question ourselves. Jesus would do whatever I think Jesus would do. And the answer should be, no, I should be doing what I know Jesus wants me to be doing. And so how do we pass that on? Okay, the second practical thing I have here is God created us for relationships. Right? Like, that's just another one of those earth-shattering pieces of information. I know that you get here today for no extra charge. God created us for relationships. He placed us in the church because that's where we have relationships. That's an environment where we have a role in developing each other's faith. You see, we're not just here to fill in space on Sunday morning. We're here to have a role in developing each other's faith. So a lot of churches have tended to take different age groups within their church and put them in different boxes. So we have children's ministry, we have a teen ministry, we have a college ministry, we have a singles ministry, we have young marrieds without children ministry and young marrieds with children ministry, we have empty nesters, we have a seniors ministry, and then probably a very seniors ministry, and then a shut-ins ministry. There's probably a sports ministry, you know, if the church is big enough, a sports ministry, you know, and so we break it down into all these different, you know, there's the music group, the worship team, and all these different teams throughout the and classes on a Sunday morning. And so it's a very efficient way of teaching and ministering to needs. Put people who are similar together. Right? And you can address their needs, you can study topics of interest. And that's, there's a lot to say of positive things to say about that. But it shouldn't be the end of the story. We shouldn't just be keeping people in their boxes. There needs to be this string that runs through the boxes, connecting them. A large church out in California teamed up with Fuller University and did some research into what helps Christian teens keep their faith. Okay. There are these statistics out there of the number of teens that leave church, leave their faith when they hit college. They're just sitting in church, spinning their wheels until they can be out on their own, keeping their parents happy. And one of the things they found is that intergenerational relationships were key factors in young people keeping their faith. They published the results in a book titled Sticky Faith. Although we don't have Wi-Fi up on the church Facebook page, I put an article that sort of summarizes this. But one of their recommendations is that parents and churches seek to provide 5 healthy adult relationships for each child. So they kind of took the, I don't know how many churches do this, but let's say in a classroom, you want one adult for five kids. Obviously not a public school system, but maybe a church, okay? So one adult for five kids. And they said, what if we flip that and said five adults for one kid? Not in the classroom, but in that kid's life. And it's actually been verified by some additional research. It says that ratio is actually pretty good. That if children have five relationships, adult relationships, but I think it said the research was fairly specific, between the ages of 15 and 18, if children, teens there, have five adult relationships, then they're less likely to leave their faith when they leave high school. And you can see the benefits of that because it allows the child to see different expressions of faith. Because there are parts of my life where my faith is strong and healthy. There are parts of my life where my faith is dysfunctional. Yeah? Where my faith has weaknesses. And so when my child is able to spend time in the homes of other people that I trust and respect, then they're able to see, oh, well, Christianity is not just personified in the life of my parent. Like, there are other expressions of that, even though the parent continues to be the primary role model. But it also gives the child choices about who to ask difficult questions. So I posed, I was discussing this with some youth ministers, and one of them just said, yeah, we've really jumped into this idea of the five adults for the one. And they said one of the big benefits is that this stuff that kids don't want to ask their parents about, right? You know, the sort of stuff that sends parents through the roof, takes away driving privileges, ends up with the teen being grounded, you know, I mean, all sorts of ramifications and consequences. And they're able to say, now those teens have four other adults in the church that they can go and they can talk to. And they're going to get a different response. Perhaps they want to express doubts about their faith early on. You know? And it's not necessarily just, you know, immoral behavior or something that they're acting out. It may be questions about this or about that or relationship advice. It's just like, ah, it's so awkward talking with my parents about, you know, relationships, but I got to know this person and they have a really good perspective there. And so the idea of a village sort of expands. And so Proverbs is about a community surrounding its young people and cheering them through life, pointing the way to wisdom, celebrating successes while learning from mistakes. And so during this month of hospitality, I've emphasized cross-cultural differences, and that's really important for us as a church, right? For people of different cultural backgrounds to get together and talk. Right? That's just who we are. And you may get sick of me saying that, but it's just a vital message, speaking of mottos that are painted up around the locker room, right? That's just a vital message for us as a church. People of different cultural backgrounds need to spend time together talking. If we need to have a month of hospitality to encourage us to do that, then we'll have a month of hospitality, like October, yeah, that has a week left and you're running out of time. Okay, but... But it may be that the person who is different from you, that you choose to have a milkshake with, is a teenager. You see, a teenager is very unlikely, or even a younger child, is not going to come to you and say, I would like you to be one of my five people in my life, five adults in my life that I can come to when I don't want to talk to my parents and when I'm looking for a different expression of Christian faith lived out, you know, as an alternative role model for me. I can't picture me as a teen. I can't picture any of the teens I knew when I was a teen going to an adult and saying that. So it takes the initiative of the adults to say, you know, there are children, whatever age, because you can't just get to 15 and suddenly say, oh, I'm going to start mentoring you. Huh? It's much easier. So my goal as a parent is to say, well, who does Sophie have in her life? You know, who, when she's 15, who are those five people going to be that she can trust, that she can talk to, and that we're happy? You know? Hey, look, if you won't talk to us about what's going on in your life, would you like to go and do that? Or we can say to the adult, we can say, hey, would you like to take Sophie out for dinner? Yeah. And that's my parenting, is to call in the reinforcements. And I may never know what is said at that dinner. When Julie and I were in Australia, two of our nieces had been baptized while we were here, you know, so in the year before. And so we took them out. We said, we want to take time to go out for breakfast with you. And we took those nieces out, you know, by themselves, out for breakfast, talk with them, just encourage them, just reinforce that this was an important decision for them. We've never had another spiritual conversation. They don't Skype us or call us up on the phone. But we wanted to establish that we're here to support your faith and your faith decision and to invest in that. And my sister and her husband didn't have any problems letting us do that. They don't know us so well now that we live so far away, you know, but that was, they felt safe, you know, letting us go and do that. And so it's this idea of expanding a village. So adults, think about, do you have relationships with young people? Because there's no good just sitting around saying, oh, look how many of our young people leave the church when they leave the home, if we haven't done anything. And if we just say, oh, I'll do it with my family, well, that's good. But we have an opportunity to expand that and be active in other people's lives, other families' lives as well. Proverbs reminds us that faith grows over time. And we as a church want to help young Christians make those adjustments. The way we started thinking was good for the moment, but not for all time. And sometimes we get in this mindset, no matter our age, and we say, well, that's the way I was taught back then. I think this happens a lot in churches. You know, when I came into the church, I went to this class, and this is what I was taught. Okay? It's like, great. Sounds like you got a really good Proverbs 10 and 11 sound foundation. And how have you grown from there? How have you grown from there? How do you deal with the complexities of life these days? How has your faith grown and your understanding of God and His kingdom grown over time? And so we need to have that awareness of for ourselves before we pass it on to others. And then last thing I just wanted to say really quickly is this perspective of Proverbs about cause and effect and the way life happens, you know, is offset by two other books in the wisdom literature, and that is Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes questions the fundamental perspective of Proverbs. Proverbs says good happens to good, bad happens to bad. Ecclesiastes says, what's the point of any of it? Right? You're here, you live, you work, you're industrious, and then you give your money to your son and he goes and blows it. Right? So, happy life. Yeah? And that's really it. And so, in the wisdom literature, it's not a simplistic body of work. It acknowledges these more profound questions and says the meaning for life must be, Ecclesiastes says, must be outside of our daily routine, although our daily routine plays into it. And then we go to Job, and Job also challenges this outlook of Proverbs. Although it asks a different question. It says, why do good people suffer? And so together we get this more holistic sense of wisdom, of how the world works. And to just look at sections or to just grab a proverb and think, oh, this explains the meaning of life is a little naive. And so, how do you pass on your faith and the lessons that you've learned in life? Next week, I'm going to give you an opportunity. And someone may like to help me with this, but I want to find a wall in the church building. It's going to be the Lawson Road Wall of Wisdom, at least through till Thanksgiving. And next week, I'd like you to think, between now and then, of some advice. Like I mentioned in that book of wisdom, maybe it's some advice about joy, about love, about peace. And it's got to fit on a post-it note. All right? It's a proverb, not a book. And I know, parents, if you're a parent, we're better at books than proverbs, aren't we? just ask your kids. And so we're going to give you the opportunity to leave a piece of wisdom on the Lawson Road wall of wisdom over the next few weeks. So think about it. What's some godly advice that you can pass on to others? And that's your homework, to encourage one another, to speak about our faith and to point people to God. Because we believe that God is the answer in a world that is unpredictable, random, and often chaotic. And that's our testimony this morning. That was certainly the testimony of the sages who wrote Proverbs, to say that God is the answer. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Amen. If we can encourage you or point you to God, introduce you to God perhaps for the first time, then we would like to have that conversation with you. We'd like to pray with you and encourage you. Just come to the front and let me know as we stand and sing this next song together.